I wanna get locked up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and get rock on my on the only podcast that I'll hear. Rip off my ears. Oh, the rock show, 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 the rock show. Oh, I want the rock show.
Hello, people. Welcome to another fine episode of The Rock Show, and we're introducing the band Oasis. This show is 177. We'll be talking about the band Oasis, a great British band. They've had a bunch of hits, and if you ever seen these guys live, don't be surprised if somebody storm off the freaking stage in the middle of the show.
Yeah, the rivalry between Liam and Noel Gallagher is legendary.
Oh my God.
You know, it hurt the band in so many ways. It's a shame, but they really, like, when I was doing the research for this podcast, I kind of forgot, you know, how good this band was. You know, I wasn't at the time. I was a moderate fan. What's the Story in Morning Glory? I had that album.
That was a great album.
And I think I had definitely maybe the first album as well. Yeah. And, you know, I listened to it regularly. I thought it was pretty good. I never did see them. I know you did.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I kind of regret that, because going back, doing the research, I love when this happens, when I do a show like this and I kind of realize, wow, that really was some good music, and then just start listening to it, you know? But it's a long story today. I got almost 20 pages of notes. So whenever you're ready, we'll start.
I am ready. I think we should start the show right away, because I'm still amazed that how many years they lasted.
Almost 20 years.
Almost, yeah, 1991 to 2009. I thought they were even still together. They might get together, or they started a band or something. But
now they've gone off and done solo projects. I mean, you know, maybe if enough money came along, they would do it. I have no idea. You know, it seems like these two brothers are like, you know, Ray and Dave of the Kinks. You know, like, they don't get along either, you know.
But these guys, you know what's crazy about these guys? They sold over 70 million albums. Think about that. In 20 years, they sold. That's a lot of albums, man. 70 million.
You're up there with some of the biggest people ever.
Yeah.
You know? And, I mean, they were huge. They were selling out Wembley Stadium, you know, and playing these giant shows and you know, multiple nights at Madison Square Garden and things like that.
When I saw them, they weren't even mad. They just started. I think it was Morning Glory just came out. They were touring, and they did the theater.
And the Forum Theater, when that was still there.
Yeah. It was called the Paramount Theater.
Paramount. It's the same place. Yes, yeah, it's smaller.
I think at the time, but they changed the name. But I know it was either called the Theater or the Paramount. They played, like, there was probably, like, it was sold out. There was like 5,000 people there. That were, like, yeah. And they started rocking and playing, and then, like by the fifth song, the fight broke out, and one guy just left and didn't come back, and the other brother just finished. It's insane. I think Liam stayed, and no one ran out like a little biatch.
Well, you know, I'm gonna talk about
the middle of the show.
I'm gonna talk about the beginnings of the band, and I think I know why that this happened. Anyway, now, they were originally known as The Rain and formed in Manchester in 1991. Now, like you said, Oasis went on to sell 70 million records. They had 8 UK number one singles and 8 also number one albums. They also were platinum sellers in the United States.
Yeah.
And they were nominated for 2 Grammys as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in 1991, bassist Paul McGuigan, guitarist Paul Authors, and drummer Tony McCarroll and singer Chris Hutton formed a band called The Rain. Okay. The band was not happy with the singer, Chris Hutton, too much, and was kind of looking for a replacement. Liam Gallagher came along. He was a guy that was acquainted with the band, and he ended up replacing Hutton, but he insisted on the band changing its name. He didn't like that name. So they settled on the name Oasis, and it was chosen because of a poster of the band in spiral carpets that they, Liam, when he was younger, with his brother Noel in the same bedroom when they were kids, had a poster of this. And Oasis represented a place called the Oasis Leisure Center that was listed as a venue on the poster where the band was playing.
Yeah.
Okay. So they played their first gig as Oasis on August 14th, 1991. At the Boardwalk Club in Manchester, England, okay, which is where they were from. And Liam's brother, Noel Gallagher, was working as a roadie for that band in Spiral Carpets and went to the gig with a group of his friends. And they weren't particularly impressed by them, but Noel thought that he could use the band as a vehicle or an outlet for music that he had. He had songs written for years. And, he approached the band to discuss this, and he basically, you know, they wanted him in the band because he had all these songs. But he said, "I'll only join if I am the leader of the band, and they would have to be committed to commercial success at all times, and I have to be the main songwriter." Well, they agreed to this. And he also insisted on, and I think this was the key to their sound, to keep it simple, all right, a simplicity to their music. Guitarist Paul Authors agreed to only play simple bar chords. Okay, he didn't get crazy on his guitar. Simple bar chords. And Paul McGuigan would use simple root bass notes when he played bass. Tony McCarroll played basic rhythms. They didn't have a lot going on.
Yeah.
Okay. But they also turned up the distortion levels on their amps, which gave them a very strong sound.
Yeah.
Okay. Simple and strong, you know, and that for me is always key. I like things simple and I like things loud, you know, and that's what they were. Okay. And it was really like the basis core of their sound. Which they would develop over the years and, you know, tweak that, and it would be great. Now, excuse me. After over a year of live shows with this new and exciting lineup, they had a demo recorded called the Live Demonstration Tape. It was released later as that. And they were approached by Creation Records co-owner Alan McGee. The band was invited to play King Tut's Wah Wah Hut Club in Glasgow, Scotland, and they rented a van and made that drive from Manchester up there to Scotland. When they got there, they found out they weren't on the list to play. So after some, you know, discussions, I'm sure some yelling and screaming, they managed to get the opening slot. Okay, anyway, and McGee was so impressed that he offered them a recording contract immediately. But however, yeah, they didn't sign until several months later. In that time, they were having some problems securing an American contract. Now, they signed a worldwide deal with Sony. And in doing so, they got Creation Records to be their label in the UK, okay, with Sony as the parent label. So following a very limited white label release of the demo of their song Columbia, which is very rare to find, very hard to find. Yeah. Oasis went on a UK tour to promote the release of their first single, Supersonic, playing venues such as the Tunbridge Wells Forum, which was actually a converted public toilet. Supersonic was released in April of 1994 and reached number 31 in the UK. The release was followed by a song called Shaker Maker, which became the subject of a plagiarism suit, okay, where Oasis had to pay the writers of the song I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing in perfect harmony. You know, after it was litigated that the harmony sounded too close to that song. Okay. I don't know. I've heard it. I get it, but you know, it's one of those things. But they had to pay some money to this guy.
It wasn't that close, but it wasn't total. But you know what? They paid it.
They paid it just to get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Now their third single, Live Forever, was their first UK top 10. After months of troubled recording and troubled mixings, Oasis' debut album, Definitely Maybe, was released on August 29th, 1994, entering the charts at number one within a week of its release, which at the time was a record in the UK for the fastest selling album.
These guys were like instant success right away. They put the ball into it for the debut album to be number one, especially with the competition and all the stuff that was out there. You know what? That's impressive.
Very impressive. I mean, they broke a record probably held by the Beatles or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Before. And they definitely were a force to be reckoned with. I mean, I think everybody was looking forward to that album. They were known as a great live act at that point in England. So nearly a year of constant touring and recording, along with a very hedonistic lifestyle that they were known for, it was taking its toll on Oasis. Now, this behavior culminated during a gig in Los Angeles in September 1994, when Liam, after a lackluster live performance, made offensive remarks about the American audience. Okay, he also hit his brother Noel, I think, in the head with his tambourine. Okay. And Noel actually got very upset and quit the band temporarily. Okay. That happened in Los Angeles. He left. He went up to San Francisco. Nobody could find him. He was tracked down by Creation record executive Tim Abbott. And they made a trip to Las Vegas. He made up with his brother and rejoined the band for the show in Minneapolis. The next releases were Cigarettes and Alcohol and the Christmas time single Whatever, which entered the British charts at number three. All right, so they're doing very well. Oasis had their first number one UK single in April of 1995 with the song Some Might Say. At the same time, drummer Tony McCarroll was ousted from the band. The Gallagher brothers said he was a great guy, but couldn't drum the new songs. He was replaced by former Star Club drummer Alan White. He was recommended to them by The Jam's Paul Weller, who had befriended the band.
The Jam.
Now, yeah. Good guy to be your friend, Paul Weller.
Yeah.
Now, White made his debut on Top of the Pops with the performance of Some Might Say. The band immediately went back into the studio in May of 1995 to start work on their second album. They also recorded a live concert that would see its release in August as Live by the Sea, Live by the Sea. Oasis never really associated themselves with the Britpop scene, even though they were kind of lumped in with that. The media loves to make labels. So there was a Britpop BBC special called Britpop Now that Oasis was not invited to. It was organized by Britpop band Blur singer named Damon Albarn. Somehow, a rivalry between the two bands was instigated in the media. Okay. And the rivalry was over who was selling more records. and more albums and singles. And it was a ridiculous rivalry that peaked with Noel Gallagher chiming in, saying in a publication, The Observer, that he wished Blur members would all catch AIDS and die, which caused a media furor, okay, like, you know, a media firestorm, okay. And he ended up having to apologize formally in a letter on several publications. Bassist Paul McGuigan briefly left the band in September of 1995, citing nervous exhaustion. You know, whenever it's nervous exhaustion, it's drugs.
Okay. Yeah.
he was replaced by Scott McLeod, formerly of the Ya-Ya's, who was featured in the Wonderwall video and played soon following. He played some following dates. Now, he would abruptly leave the band right after, writing a letter to Noel claiming he felt that he made a wrong decision joining Oasis. So Noel sent him a letter back replying that, I think you did too. Good luck signing on. Now, do you know what that means?
No, what that means?
Okay, when you say signing on, it means you're going on the dole. You're going on welfare. So basically what he said was, I think you did too. Good luck signing on to welfare.
Whoa, man.
Okay, so McGuigan... Paul McGuigan, who had left, he was persuaded to return to the band, which he did. Okay. So What's the Story, Morning Glory, released in October of 1995, was a bit of a softer sounding album than the first one. Okay. And it got some mixed reviews, most good.
However, I think
it holds up. It's probably their best. But yeah. However, it, you know, despite any kind of mixed reviews, it was a commercial success. The album spawned two hit singles, Wonderwall and Don't Look Back in Anger. It also contained Champagne Supernova, which featured guitar and backing vocals by Paul Weller from The Jam.
Yeah, and the album was no joke. The album sold, 4 million copies and 22 million copies worldwide. Like in the UK, it sold like 4 million copies, breaking the charts. Like
I don't think there's any problem there. I think everybody's liking your album, you know.
Yeah.
Critics suck. Okay. You know, they just one man's opinion or woman.
Yeah.
You know, now the song reached number one on the US modern rock charts. That was Champagne Supernova.
Yeah.
In November of 1995, Oasis played a memorable series of gigs at Earl's Court in London on back to back nights. Now, Noel Gallagher played a custom Epiphone guitar with a Union Jack paintwork on it. It was released later to the public as something you could get, and it was called the Supernova guitar.
Yeah.
So it was basically an Epiphone with the Union Jack British flag on it. On April 27th and 28th in 1996, the group played their first outdoor headlining shows at Main Road Football Stadium, which is the home of Man City, Manchester City Football Club.
Yep.
Of whom Gallagher, both the Gallagher brothers were big fans their whole lives of that. Later that year, a video was released called There and Then that featured live footage from Man City gigs and the Earl's Court gigs as well. Oasis would soon be playing to audiences as large as 80,000 people, and these shows would sell out in minutes.
Crazy, crazy.
I know. Back-to-back shows at Knebworth House in England saw them play to 125,000 people each night. And they were record-breaking numbers for outdoor shows. I mean, they were breaking attendance records every night. Yeah. So Oasis were due to record an episode of MTV's Unplugged at the Royal Festival Hall, but Liam pulled out in the last minute, claiming he had a sore throat. Okay. But what he did was, you know, they were about to go on, record the Unplugged episode. Liam says, I'm not going on. I don't feel good. I got a sore throat. So they go on anyway with Adam. But what he did was he ended up going up into a balcony box.
Yeah.
All right. He brought beers and cigarettes, okay, with him. And he heckled Noel from the top of the room. Okay. All right. I mean, he was like yelling like you suck and yeah, all kind of whatever. Okay. So 4 days later, Liam refused to go on the American leg of the tour. Now the band left without him, leaving Noel with all the vocal duties. And Liam would rejoin the tour on August 30th. And on September 4th, 1996, the band performed Champagne Supernova at the 1996 MTV Music Awards at Radio City Music Hall in New York City. I remember that.
Yeah.
At that performance, Liam made gestures to Noel during his guitar solo, then spat beer all over the stage before storming off the stage. A few weeks later, Noel flew home without the band, who followed on another flight, and breakup rumors were everywhere, but the two brothers ended up reconciling again, and they completed the tour. Okay?
They always fought, man. When I went to that show after the fifth song, they just got into a huge fight in front of everybody, and fucking Noel just got the fuck out of there. It's like, fuck you, I'm out of here.
Yeah,
dude, it was fucking weird, man.
Yeah, in front of thousands of people.
Then the other guy just finished the show and he played like for 2 hours and it was great.
Well, that's the good thing about having two lead singers in a band.
Yeah.
All right. If one ain't there, the other one can pick it up.
It was freaking weird, man. Yeah. They just fought.
Let me ask you something. It kind of alludes to what I was saying before. I think I understand Liam. Like, Liam joined the band and you know, started it, gave it the name, and then they agree to let Noel come in under these circumstances of writing songs, all the songs, how to write all the songs,
yeah, okay,
and be the leader of the band and, yeah, you know, like that. And I'm like, what if Liam had songs?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he didn't want to join the band before Noel even approached. Noel could have had a band, but he just kind of put himself into Liam's band.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just surmising that would piss me off, I think, like after a while. Like, why am I, you know, I want to be able to write shit too. You know?
But my brother's doing it.
My brother's doing it all and getting all the writing credit, which, you know, who knows how that translated financially too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these guys made millions, but you know, who knows? So that's just my theory. If anyone has a better theory, let me know.
You want to hear something funny? You know, that 250 is still the largest outdoor thing. It's still a record in the record. UK.
Yeah.
That many people in one place.
I believe it. I can't think of anybody, you know, from England that was that big in recent years.
They were huge.
You know, I mean, there was some big acts coming out of England in the 2000s, Amy Winehouse, all that stuff, but yeah, she didn't play like that. So no. Oasis spent the end of 1996 and the first 3 months of 1997 at Abbey Road Studios in London and also at Ridge Farm Studios in Surrey, recording their third album called Be Here Now. The album's recording was once again plagued with arguments between Noel and Liam. Be Here Now was released in August of 1997 to much fanfare and initially very good sales. Now, Noel, however, quickly came to the conclusion while touring the album that the album didn't hold up to their past recordings. Critics and fans and many in Oasis's inner circle thought it was a very good album, but it had a number one single called Do You Know What I Mean? But Noel felt he hadn't put enough of himself into the recording. He didn't put enough effort into recording the album. Writing the album, which he really did over just one weekend while on vacation with Kate Moss, Johnny Depp, and Mick Jagger. Okay, so I don't know. I think it's a decent record. Is it their best? No, but I don't. He was very hard on himself with that one. So after the conclusion of the Be Here Now tour in early 1998, the group kept a low profile. In the process, they released a compilation of 14 B-sides called The Master Plan, which any Oasis fan should check out.
Yeah, it's good.
These are like B-sides, unreleased stuff, you know, interesting. Noel has stated that he likes this record much more than Be Here Now, and that the B-sides in that period were much more interesting and inspired songs than the stuff they released on the album. I don't know if I agree with that. I guess, you know, it's interesting stuff. Now, during this period, Noel was living at a place called Supernova Heights in Belsize Park in London, very ritzy area.
Yeah.
He was known for his, you know, crazy parties, okay, featuring a lot of celebrities and a lot of debauchery and hedonism going on there.
Yeah.
Okay. In early 1999, Oasis began work on what would be their fourth album. Things were not going well right off the bat. Founding member Paul Authors left the band. At first, it was explained that the split was amicable, with Authors claiming that he wanted to spend more time with his family and pursue other endeavors outside of music. But soon after, Noel claimed that the split was because of a no drink and drug policy that he had put in place because of Liam. Okay. Liam would get lumped up and he couldn't sing. Okay. So when they were recording in the studio, he implemented a rule saying no drinking or drugs while we're recording, so Liam would have a good voice. Apparently there was a confrontation with Authors over this policy. Okay. Shortly right after, Paul McGuigan would leave the band, and the Gallagher brothers held a press conference assuring everybody that Oasis was not breaking up and they would go on, find new people. Now, after the completion of the recording sessions, the band began searching for replacement members. Colin Jem, his nickname was Colin Jem Archer, former member of Heavy Stereo, was brought in to play guitar. Finding a bassist would prove to be a little more difficult, but the band settled in nicely with Andy Bell, former guitarist, songwriter for Ride and a band called Hurricane Number One. Now, Andy had never played bass. He was a guitarist, but he was willing to learn. And basically, preparation for a scheduled December U.S. tour began with him learning bass. He had to learn the bass.
That gotta be crazy that you gotta learn, like, you know, you're a musician, but now you gotta learn this new, it's wow.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're not gonna turn down being in Oasis, okay?
No.
You're like, look, I can play guitar, I can't play bass, but I'll figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
And if they want you, they'll take you, and that's what happened, you know? They actually were very impressed that he was willing to do that. So,
yeah.
You know, Creation Records folded at this time, and the band formed their own label called Big Brother. This label released all of Oasis's subsequent records in the UK and Ireland. Now, think about that name, Big Brother.
Yeah.
Okay. That's Noel.
Yeah.
Another thing to piss Liam off.
I don't know.
I mean, it's just you try to figure it out what the problem is, and it's kind of right there. You know, Oasis's fourth album was titled Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, and it was released in February of 2000 and reached number one on the British charts and peaked at number 24 on the US Billboard charts. Four singles were released from the album. The songs Go Let It Out, Who Feels Love, Sunday Morning Call, and Where Did It All Go Wrong? The Go Let It Out video was filmed before Bell joined the group. So it featured this unusual lineup of Liam on rhythm guitar, Archer on lead guitar, and Noel was playing bass in that video. Since this was the first album with major personnel changes, the band adjusted their sound and image a bit. This record is a little more psychedelic influenced. They also had a new Oasis logo designed by Jem Archer himself. Liam Gallagher also had a track written by him on it called Little James, the first time Liam ever had a song of his own. All in all, the album received a somewhat lukewarm response after a few weeks. It kind of it did well, okay, but it didn't do as well as others and kind of fizzled out a little bit. Now, despite that, the band went on a world tour. Okay, touring was always a strong point for them. And right off the bat, there was some stumbling blocks. Immediately when a gig in Barcelona, Spain had to be canceled because Alan White's arm seized up from a bout of tendonitis.
Damn.
And he couldn't drum. So the band spent that night getting lumped up in Barcelona. All right. Nolan Liam had an argument, and Noel announced that he's not doing any more overseas shows. He'll just do British and, you know, the British area shows. So Oasis finished the tour without him. Noel returned for the Irish and British legs of the tour, which included major shows at Wembley Stadium. The live album, Familiar to Millions, released in late 2000, was from the first of these Wembley gigs. Throughout 2001, Oasis split most of their time recording and touring, basically. Yeah. Both. They played gigs with the Black Crowes, Space Hog, and even a gig with Neil Young. The new album titled Heathen Chemistry, and it was the first to feature new members Andy Bell and Jem Archer, was released in July of 2002. It got to number one in the UK and got to number 23 in the States. Once again, the album had mixed reviews. The singles, The Hindu Times, Stop Crying Your Heart Out, Little by Little, She Is Love, were written by Noel. And a fourth called Songbird was the first single written by Liam to be released. Okay. Johnny Marr of the Smiths was a guest guitarist and did some backing vocals on this album as well. All in all, it was much more of a band effort than previous records. So now you got Liam contributing. Okay, they're bringing in some other guest people. It's more of a band effort than just a Noel effort.
You know what it is, and they were still selling albums. It wasn't like the population, like they were still popular. They were still selling albums. They weren't saying as many, but they weren't saying like. They were still
million sellers. I'll make that clear. When I say that something wasn't as popular, I mean, if you were selling five and then you drop down to two, that's not too bad. Okay. Yeah. You know, it's still a lot of records and a lot of fans.
Yeah, because the album's reaching just number one in the UK and then 23 in the US.
Yeah.
About the albums.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, they always did well commercially.
Yeah.
After the album's release, the band embarked on a tour, as they usually did.
Yeah.
And this tour was marred with a lot of incidents. In late summer 2002, in the United States, Noel Bell and touring keyboardist that they had named Jay Darlington were involved in a car crash. Nobody was seriously hurt, but it did result in a few canceled shows. In December of 2002, the latter half of the German leg of the tour had to be postponed. Liam, Alan White, and three other members of their entourage were arrested after a violent brawl at a Munich nightclub. All right. The band had been drinking heavily, okay, and tests on Liam showed that he was high on cocaine as well. He lost two front teeth and kicked a police officer in the ribs. Alan suffered minor injuries after an ashtray was broken over his head. Okay. 2 years later, Liam was fined £40,000 for this incident, and the band returned to Germany in March of 2003 to play the postponed dates.
Savage.
Lumped up and got in a fight. In late December 2003, Oasis began recording their sixth album called Don't Believe the Truth. It was planned to release the album in September of 2004, which coincided with what would be the 10-year anniversary of their debut album, Definitely Maybe. However, longtime drummer Alan White would be kicked out of the band. White was replaced by Zach Starkey, who was Ringo Starr's son. Okay. He had been playing for a while with The Who. He plays on this album, but was not an official member. He never really was. All right. He was, I believe, on salary. Starkey would play his first live gig at the Pool Lighthouse show scheduled. Okay. A few days after that, Starkey played the Glastonbury Festival, and it was mostly a greatest hits set, which included two new songs, a track by Jem Archer called A Bell Will Ring, and Liam's The Meaning of Soul. New Musical Express called the show a disaster. Apparently, Liam Gallagher's uninspired singing and Starkey's inexperience with some of the material was the problem. Okay. Mm. Looks like they might not have been ready to be out there yet. You know, yeah. Starkey had to learn the songs. So Oasis's sixth album, Don't Believe the Truth, was completed at Capitol Studios in Los Angeles from October to December of 2004. Producer David Sardi was at the helm because Noel Gallagher decided to step from that role. Okay. He produced a lot. This time they got this other guy. Don't Believe the Truth was released in May of 2005, and it completed their contract with Sony BMG. It followed the path of prior album Healing Chemistry as a band effort, songwriting-wise. Many hailed this album as their best.
Yeah.
Okay. Since at least their best since What's the Story, Morning Glory. Two singles, one song called Lila, and then another one called The Importance of Being Idle, went to number one in the UK, and Let There Be Love went to number two.
That's not bad.
Nope, not bad. The album sold more than 6 million copies. In May 2005, the band's new lineup embarked on a world tour, starting at the London Astoria and finishing in May of 2006 in Mexico City.
Yeah.
They hit 26 countries in total, including sold-out Madison Square Garden shows in New York and LA's Hollywood Bowl.
That's big.
Big, yes. With their newfound resurgence, a rockumentary film was released entitled Lord Don't Slow Me Down, and a DVD of a live show in Manchester was also released. A double album compilation entitled Stop the Clocks was released in 2006, featuring what the band says are their most definitive songs. They released their first digital-only release, Lord Don't Slow Me Down, in October 2007. The song debuted at number 10 in the UK single charts right away. Oasis recorded between July and September of 2007 for a new release. However, Noel had a son at that time, and the band took a short break. They re-entered the studio in November and finished recording Dig Out Your Soul by March of 2008. Released in October of that year, it was the band's seventh album. However, in May, Zach Starkey left the band and was replaced by Chris Sharrock, formerly of The Laz, on drums. Once again, like Starkey, Sharrock was not an official member. He went on tour with the band immediately, though.
Yeah.
And the first single was a track called The Shock of the Lightning, written by Noel Gallagher. The tour started off with an incident in Toronto at the Virgin Festival when an audience member ran up on stage and physically attacked Noel. I remember seeing this. Attacked Noel, breaking three ribs and dislodging several more as a result. Okay, the guy just started pounding on him, broke his ribs and everything.
Crazy.
Yeah, the group had to cancel several upcoming shows while he recovered. And in June 2008, Oasis re-signed with Sony BMG for another three-album deal. The band continued touring into 2009, and in August of 2009, Oasis had to cancel a gig at the V Festival in Chelmsford. Liam had laryngitis, and Noel made a comment in 2011, later on, that Liam just had a hangover. Okay, years later, he made this comment in the press. And Liam sued Noel over it, claiming he had medical records and that he did have laryngitis. So Noel had to make a formal apology, and the lawsuit was dropped. This was a few years later after they broke up.
That's crazy.
Now, they were scheduled to play at the Rock and Sane Festival near Paris in August of 2009. However, it was announced midway through the festival that Oasis would not be playing. Noel announced that he quit the band because he couldn't spend, the quote was, he couldn't spend another day in the band with Liam. Officially, that was the end of the band. But they did release two more albums without Noel under the name of BDI until they broke up in 2014. Liam Gallagher started a solo career and has released three solo records. Noel formed what was the band, the Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, and has released three albums with them.
I think the reason they had to, I think Lehman stayed with, they probably had to release the three album because they just got a three album deal.
Yeah. So they had to do their obligations. Otherwise, Sony would have sued them. That's all I got for you. So Oasis is no more. You could see these guys in, you know, alone here and there.
Yeah.
I don't think they're that active. I'm not sure. I haven't seen them coming around. I mean, I know we had COVID and everything, but I haven't heard much from either one of them.
You know, if they did reunite and then release like the album, so they could do like the freaking what the 25, the 10th and the 30th anniversary of the.
It's already maybe more in glory. It's like 30th, yeah, coming 30, up.
30, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be cool. I'd love to see them. I never did.
Yeah, and they probably more adults now. Actually, no, they're still assholes.
I think they are kind of still at each other. I don't know what that, you know, what that's about, other than the couple of theories I said here, but you know,
I think you're onto something. The big brother, little brother, patting the other brother on the head.
Yeah, like, you know, condescending kind of shit. You know,
yeah.
I get it. You know, I haven't read a book about the band, but if there is one, I wouldn't be surprised if that's in there.
Yeah, that's true too. So, Mike, man, another great job, man. A lot of history of the Oasis and the brothers. And, man, we look forward to what are some of the upcoming shows we got coming?
This is April shows. In May, we're going to go country. Okay. May we're doing a show on Hank Williams Sr., the original Hank Williams. And also on George Jones, two very important people, obviously in country music, but also in rock music as well, because we all know rock and roll started with a mix of country and R&B,
okay,
and blues and Benny's and other drugs and, you know, all that in there.
Rock and roll.
Yep. And then in June, I believe we've got, Terry Reid, okay, and Mick Ronson. Maybe some of you out there don't know who they are. Terry Reid is a great musician from England who was almost the singer of Led Zeppelin.
Wow.
Okay. He actually turned it down, okay, for people that don't know. All right, so he has a very interesting cult following, a lot of great songs. Mick Ronson was the guitarist for Bowie on his early 70s, masterpieces, Ziggy Stardust, all that stuff. He also played for a long time with Ian Hunter when Hunter had left Mott the Hoople. Sadly, Mick died in the early 90s. It was a big loss. He died at He was like 40 or something like that. He was a young guy. We're going to talk about him. He had a very interesting career. That's what we got coming up.
All right, man. Sounds good, man. A lot of information there. So with that, Mike, where can people find you?
Okay, you can find me on Facebook under Rocko Mike, and also the Rock Show Podcast group page on Facebook. I'm very active in both places. Of course, I'm on Instagram under RockerMike212. I'm on Twitter as RockerMike212. Everything else, Getter, Truth Social, Parler, MeWe, Clout Hub. I'm not sure if I'm forgetting anything. I'm just Rocker Mike on all that. So Google me. You'll find it. Rocker Mike or Rocko Mike on Facebook. Where can we find you?
Rocko Mike.
Yeah. We can find you,
and me, you can find me in any social media outlet. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube on the Getting Lumped Up podcast. And also remember to like and subscribe to the show, because that really helps us a lot. More people subscribe, you know, the more contact we can get out there, and the more people that might be able to give us some commercials and stuff. So we're definitely trying to grow the universe here, the Lumped Up universe, with the shows that we do. And we'd like to thank you people for your support, and definitely subscribe and like. And that really help us out, because we'll be moving up, and then we'll be the most stream, and our video will pop up more. Well, you know, the more people I like you, you know, you start popping up and people scream, and they're either going to like us or hate us. Very simple.
Right.
And with that, people, have a great week. And remember, don't get drunk.
Get lumped up.
See you next week.
Take care, people.
Get lumped up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and get rock on mine. On the only podcast that I'll hear, that won't make me wanna rip off my ear.